Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
I'm taking a bit of a detour with regard to my videos because of the topic that I did about Barend Strydom as the first white wolf, him being a South African, and then there were two other white wolves. I've had people criticize me for saying things about another white wolf, and that's the guy we're going to take a quick look at today. His name is Anders Breivik, and he's Norwegian. Now, there are many, many interesting things about Anders Breivik. Just a point before I forget, while he's been in jail, he has in recent years actually changed his name, and I can't even pronounce his new name that he's chosen for himself, but it's a very Norwegian name, and let's just leave it at that. For my purposes, I will keep referring to him as Anders Breivik. Now, when I did that video about Barend Strydom, and Boer Jack and I were talking about many things there to do with South Africa, the topic of Anders Breivik came up again. And then somebody on my channel said to me that if I want to get a good idea of how organized Breivik was, I should watch a certain movie. And he said, if you just watch the first 30 minutes of the movie, you'll get an idea how organized this guy was. And thanks to the help of a friend, I managed to get hold of a copy of this movie. But even before I got hold of the movie, I managed to get hold of a reading that somebody did of the introduction to Anders Breivik's document. Like most of the white wolves in the age of the internet, and he being the first of the white wolves of the age of the internet, he actually wrote a manifesto for himself. And can you believe his manifesto was 1,500 pages long? In many ways, Anders Breivik has led the way in the age of the internet. He's the first killer that I know of in the age of the internet, the first whites-only mass killer, and he's the first to also put out a document. And after him, most of the other guys, or at least most of the famous ones, Dylan Roof and Brenton Tarrant, they've written their own manifestos. But Breivik is the first, and in many respects, Breivik is actually the best to date, despite the, let's call it, competition among the white males. In my other video, I discussed the things that the white wolves proved, and that the basic thing that these white wolves have proven is that a white man can be extremely effective as a killing machine in this current age, and that the failure of whites in the white right is really due to enemy agents and fake leaders and all kinds of other mechanisms that mess with white groups. And this has made a lot of people in the white right across the world very despondent. However, the white wolves, the lone white wolves who went on their killing sprees, have completely changed that, because they've shown that when you are acting alone and you don't have people ratting on you and you don't have traitors and spies in your midst, as happens in all groups, that in actual fact, these white men can be amazing killers, and nobody has killed more people in his single mission than Anders Breivik. And to me, he's the greatest white wolf of the internet age, and he's a Viking. In my view, he comes from Scandinavia, comes from Norway. He's a Viking, man. And if you want to see the guy who is the greatest mass killer in the age of the internet, look no further than the Viking who showed everybody else how it should be done. Now, some of you may be very freaked out by the things that I'm saying, but give me a chance. I've got a bunch of things to tell you. There is a certain game that goes on among whites. It's something that all whites do. Men do it, women do it. When whites feel a certain inspiration, they actually start trying to be the best. And you will see this even in warfare. When Julius Caesar wrote his book about the Gallic Wars, Julius Caesar described instances where Roman soldiers were meeting up with the Gauls. These Gauls, for those who don't know, are also white people. But these Gauls would sometimes engage in some kind of combat with these whites. In the midst of a fight or in some other way, there would be times where Roman soldiers would go out of their way to fight the enemy to the utmost of their ability. And Julius Caesar described some of these instances. And then there would be this sort of brotherly contest where you had two Roman soldiers, each known for being a great fighter, and when they go and they fight, they try to outdo each other. And sometimes they almost get killed in the process. And in the one case where two went and they fought and the one tried to outdo the other, at a point the one guy was almost killed and the other guy came to save him. So in combat, in warfare, men not only fight on the same side, but like in any sport, they try to actually outdo each other. And so you see a similar thing, I think, with these white wolves. And it's just a natural part of our instinct. Whites are competitive. Whites like to achieve. Whites like success. And one thing that's very important to all whites is merit and being rewarded and recognized for your achievements. So make no mistake, these white wolves are learning from each other and they're trying to be better. You have a guy like the Australian, Brenton Tarrant, and he's the second greatest white killer of modern times in the age of the internet. And also another reason for doing this video is I want to show the people in South Africa, the whites in South Africa, that there are other whites out there in the rest of the world who also feel strongly about race. And large numbers of whites in South Africa would never even believe that this is possible, that only they can be evil racists. Well, you're about to meet other whites who killed, and they killed for racial and political reasons. And when I look at some of these people, like Breivik himself, you can see there's that certain desire for recognition and achievement. So the same old motivating forces that existed in the time of the Romans and probably existed for many thousands, even tens of thousands of years before, those same mechanisms are here right now in the age of the internet. I didn't want to do a full and very detailed study of Breivik, but I wanted to get enough of a feeling for the stuff that Breivik did and his thinking in order to have an opinion of my own. And so I went through the introduction to this 1,500-page book, and I'm starting to understand what he was trying to do. And this guy is, to my knowledge, the first guy in the age of the internet, the first white guy who went and killed for political reasons in the age of the internet. And I don't think, in fact, I'm almost certain, this guy was unaware of somebody like Barend Strydom in South Africa who had done the same thing years before. But what makes Breivik amazing is the scale on which he killed and what he did by himself. So, a few points about Breivik. He was 32 years old at the time that he did this. You know, by the time you're in your early 30s, you are definitely mature. No question about it. There may still be a bit of childishness in you in your 20s, your early 20s, but by the time you're 32, you are an adult, unquestionably. That this man did what he did at that age tells me that he put a lot of thought into it, he was serious about it. And everything he did, you will see that he did it with a great amount of skill. This man went and did this thing for his own reasons that he believed in. In the introduction to his 1,500-page book that he wrote, he basically attacked liberalism, multiculturalism, but most importantly, at the top of his list, what he attacked was political correctness. And the second thing he attacked was feminism. Breivik did not personally write every sentence of his book. What he actually did was large parts of his book are actually copied from the writings of other people on the internet. And people who've studied it can actually quote and tell you that this piece that he's written here comes from that blogger over there. He copied a lot of American writings, a lot of American conservative writings. And a key thing that went into his introduction, which was a long introduction, I might add, he went into great detail about a thing called cultural Marxism. Those who don't know about this, there were a bunch of Jewish communists in Nazi Germany, and they were called the Frankfurt School. These communist Jews fled from Germany and went to America. And these communist Jews then tried to figure out how to screw up the United States. Basically, how to fuck up civilization the way that Jewish communism does. How to fuck it up and try and get communism into America. And they came up with this concept that led to a thing we can call cultural Marxism. They moved away from going after money and capitalism. Instead, they decided that the best way forward was to destroy the values of the Western world. And a particular thing that they did, which I found very interesting, is a thing called cultural pessimism. And cultural pessimism was a critique, a negative critique on Western civilization, which makes you feel that your civilization and your values and your system and your country is dying. They deliberately bring out these pessimistic, negative thoughts and spread it among people in order to break people down and in order to break society down. Then another important part is that Western civilization is male-dominated. They refer to this as the patriarchy, and they specifically set out to get women to supplant men in positions of power. So feminism becomes a mechanism to destroy the white male, and the aim is to get the white male out of the top and replace him with a female. So now you change the civilization from a patriarchy to a matriarchy. And of course, they then say women are better and this and that. But all of it is aimed at breaking down the male dominance, which is a critical and long-standing feature and a very important feature of white civilization. A further point that I want to make is this one. A South African friend of mine who moved to Europe and worked and lived in various parts of Europe and Britain told me a few years ago when they were starting this transgender bullshit. He said to me that because I live in South Africa and I've not lived in Europe, I do not understand and I do not grasp the intensity with which the mass media, the filthy Jewish mass media, goes to work on people in the Western world. And it rams all these horrific, stupid, idiotic, civilization-destroying, white-destroying ideas down the throats of whites. And it's a drumbeat that goes on and on and on. And he told me that I do not grasp the intensity of the propaganda that comes out of these liberal shitbag newspapers and mass media. Furthermore, another friend of mine who used to live in South Africa and then moved back to Holland when he was older, he always used to talk about the European Union as being the EU-SSR. In other words, mocking it and likening it to the Soviet Union. In all of these instances, the point is that whites in Europe do not have the free speech that Americans have. Whites in Europe are under much greater pressure when it comes to things like political correctness and being kicked into line. The rules are much tougher for the whites of Europe. And in Breivik's introduction, which is very long, I'm going to repeat, it's very long, he goes and attacks political correctness endlessly. And nowadays, if I look at the kind of stuff that's coming out of Europe, there is more and more free speech that is coming out of Europe. But remember, Breivik did these things back in 2011. And he planned these things for years before. So Breivik is actually taking on the system at a time when the system was very, very controlled. Whites in Europe had very little free speech, and there was very little rebellion in Europe. You did not have people like these Schaeffers and all these others who ended up in jail for Holocaust denial and that kind of thing. You didn't have the kind of focus that you've had in recent years on Germans who are being chucked into jail for no reason, the lack of free speech, etc. Breivik was the first. Breivik went and attacked the system of political correctness at a time when nobody else was even attempting to do it. He went at the system with all guns blazing, literally. And apart from places like Holland, which is known for its free speech, the rest of Europe is very much locked down. So I think a person needs to give Breivik credit for his attacks on political correctness, because he may have done good things by launching the intensive attacks that he did. And the other thing that he hated intensely was feminism. And feminism, anyway, is a Jewish creation, and a lot of old Jewish hags, ugly Jewish hideous bitches, played the key role in the creation of feminism. And feminism's got nothing to do with making women free. It's simply the same old junk of divide and conquer. They came to take the women and turn the women against the men. Then they came and took the children to turn the children against their parents. That kind of rubbish. And it's no different to the whites in Africa, where Jewish communism came and turned the blacks against the whites. Same old thing. Get into a society, turn the one against the other, turn brother against brother, husband against wife, etc., etc. The old game of divide and conquer. But the goal is to destroy white civilization. So Breivik wrote a manifesto, a 1,500-page book, which has something of a Christian symbol to it, can you believe? A kind of Christian symbol like from the Knights Templars, and he calls it Europe 2083. And he attacks Islam a lot. Breivik spent 9 years gathering the money together to do this action. Another unique aspect of Breivik is that Breivik spent the most amount of money and time in his preparation for his violence. This man put a heck of a lot of thought and effort into it. And he spent 2 years preparing the military side of it, spending money, obtaining the weapons. He obtained tons of fertilizer for his bomb. Another point that I want to make about these white wolves. None of these white wolves have got any kind of state sponsorship or any kind of sponsorship in any form. No rich person gave them money. No organization gave them money. No church gave them money. And no government or secret service gave them money. This is very different to the blacks of Africa, where the Soviet Union spent many billions of dollars training and arming blacks in Africa to fight the whites. Soviet Union spent billions. They sent shiploads of weapons, even including tanks and sometimes aircraft. These white wolves of the internet age have to do everything themselves. They've got nobody to turn to. They've got to finance it themselves. They've got to work with their own money and organize everything themselves, because there are no sponsors. Nobody is giving them money to do what they do. And in that sense, I have a soft spot for guys like Dylan Roof, Baron Strydom. And you will remember I mentioned the young 18-year-old in South Africa, Johan Nel. He had a 0.303 rifle, an old 0.303 rifle. That is not a weapon that you can shoot with quickly. It's a weapon you've got to reload. It's slow. It's bolt action. That's all that the guy had as his weapon. Dylan Roof only had a 9mm pistol. Baron Strydom only had a 9mm pistol. I'm going to show you in a separate video the weapons the blacks had. The blacks received military training. The blacks had AK-47s. The blacks had hand grenades. They had limpet mines. They had land mines. They had RPG-7s. They had mortars. The blacks went and were trained and armed and assisted and guided by all kinds of people. All of these white wolves, probably most, if not all of them, had no military training. So they had no military training, they had no money, no sponsors, nobody to assist them. Every single thing that they did by themselves. Not only did they do it by themselves, but you know what? The white wolves had better results than black terrorists who were properly armed with military weapons. And that is an astounding achievement. I just want to read a little bit about Breivik from the Wikipedia page. It says, Breivik claims that in 2002, at the age of 23, he started a 9-year plan to finance the 2011 attacks. Founding his own computer programming business while working at the customer service company. He claims that his company grew to 6 employees and several offshore bank accounts, and that he made his first 1 million kroner at the age of 24. He writes in his manifesto that he lost 2 million kroner in stock speculation, but still had 2 million kroner to finance the attack. And then he spent 2 years working on the actual attack. This guy not only spent a very long time planning and preparing this stuff, but he was clearly extremely creative. He was able to earn a lot of money, and he's very vibrant in that sense. He's not some kind of loser. Dylan Roof, on the other hand, didn't have much going for him. But this guy clearly shows a determined purpose and a long-term plan that he's working on. And this tells me that this guy is serious. He's had years to prepare, even just planning and executing the attack. That alone is 2 years. Now, at any point in time, he could have said to himself, you know what, I don't feel like doing this anymore. Let me just call it a day. Instead, he carries on and he pushes through right to the end. All of these things tell me that this guy is serious. Whatever he was freaking serious. This meant something to him. Everything he's done before the event and even after the event tells me this guy was a serious guy and he's got deeper thoughts that are driving him. Whether he's a narcissist who's looking for attention and he wants people to look up to him, that doesn't matter. The point is, he's happy with what he's done and the payoff that he's getting. Even if the payoff is just attention that he's getting and getting his name in the newspaper and having his manifesto spread around, but he's happy with what he's done. And he's taken his whole life and gambled everything on this thing. And he knew he was going to go to jail. He knew he was going to go to jail. So, how many people did he kill? What was his casualty list? Well, it's the most astounding of all of the lone wolf killers. Truly, the Viking has shown us the way. He never referred to himself as a Viking. He actually used the term Knights Templar. He was looking on himself as some kind of Christian knight. even though he's not a Christian. He's actually an Odinist. There are a couple of things about him that are a little bit strange, but all in all, I still think of him as the Viking. He killed 77 people and injured 319. He killed 77 and injured 319. 8 died in the bomb blast, and he personally killed 69 on the island. For a single guy, this guy is the greatest white wolf in the modern age. The guy who's second on the list is the Australian Brenton Tarrant. Brenton killed 50 and injured 50. So his total casualty list is 100. Killed 50 and injured 50. And he filmed it and it's live. We can always look at that video because that's a very interesting video. But with Breivik, you're getting to a casualty list that is close to 400 people. Anders Breivik killed more people than ANC terrorist groups in South Africa using car bombs. He killed and injured more people than a whole operation organized by communists who are properly taught and have proper equipment. Again, my point is, you've got white killers who are deadlier than black communist-trained killers. They are doing better than blacks and Jews who are busy blowing stuff up. Now, in the age of the race wars in Southern Africa, which are lied about and called the liberation wars, the communists, Jews, and liberals basically set up the blacks to operate like this. They created a two-pronged strategy for the blacks. So what the blacks had was the blacks had a political organization in each of the countries in which they fought the whites. They would have a political wing, as they called it. So the political wing goes out there and it says, we want democracy, we want freedom for our people, etc. Then the blacks go and they create an armed wing. In the case of South Africa, Nelson Mandela was the creator of the armed wing. And the armed wing was called Umkhonto we Sizwe, which white South Africans often just call MK. And it confuses Americans because they think that we're talking about MK Ultra, which is a CIA operation. MK in South Africa means Umkhonto we Sizwe, and that stands for the Spear of the Nation. That is what the armed wing was called. So how the blacks approached things with their communist and Jewish leaders and drivers is that they would have a political wing which does politics and does everything legally and by the book. And then they've got an armed wing that go and kill people, torture people, murder people, and do all kinds of terrorist and other activities. And you've got this political wing and the armed wing. And then whenever it suits them, then the political wing distances itself from the armed wing so that the political wing isn't banned, but the armed wing carries out the murders. Now, in the age of the internet, where the whites didn't have any assistance, money, guidance, etc., no Jews were involved in helping the whites. In fact, Jews were working to censor whites and shut whites up. Whites have gone out and we've gone onto the internet and we've done basically the political wing angle. And we've all gone and talked about our politics and written about it and created the arguments for it. However, without state sponsorship, nobody sponsoring us in any way, we were unable to create an armed wing, even though many of us were frustrated and wished we could create an army, we couldn't because nobody had the money. And this is where these white wolves in the age of the internet have done a unique thing. These white wolves have chosen themselves and taken this path of violence all by themselves after having read what the internet bloggers wrote. Dylan Roof can tell you which websites he went to and which websites he was influenced by. Now, in the case of Breivik, who's the first, people who've gone and studied all his writings, and that includes the police, by the way, they set up an entire department just to study his writings. They were able to prove that he was using the writings of American bloggers and all kinds of political writers on the internet, most of them being American. And in that sense, Breivik took the political writings of these internet people, put it into his manifesto, and then he went and carried out his killings. Then, of course, some of these bloggers immediately distanced themselves from Breivik and denied any involvement and didn't want to have anything to do with him. But the truth of the matter is that Anders Breivik was acting as the armed wing by himself. And after Breivik, you had others coming along. You had Dylan Roof and others, Bowers, and there have been others. So the writers on the internet and the people creating content were themselves getting very frustrated and wishing there would be some kind of violent action. And without realizing it, they influenced people so strongly that individuals decided it's time to go and kill. Dylan Roof talks about that. Bowers, who went and shot the Jews, talks about it, etc. But Breivik is the first. And Breivik's writings are actually a reflection. They are actually copies of the writings of others. So without having an organization and an ability to create our own armed wing, what we've had is whites just volunteering by themselves and making their own personal decision to be our armed wing. And in that sense, it's a fantastic thing. They've come in and they've done violence in the same way that the blacks did violence. The only difference is our armed wing is very, very tiny compared to what the blacks had. The blacks had whole armies and training camps and had all kinds of specialists assisting them, whereas our armed wing is a handful of people who chose that path for themselves. And a further point about these white wolves is they are a reflection of a lot of white male frustration. Lots of us, including myself, have wished that we could get people to go and kill others. And we've even tried in our own ways to talk to people. I have personally done that myself. I've gone and spoken to somebody who claimed to be a Rhodesian Zulu scout. And I said to him, "Can't you kill Mugabe?" I went to a very famous mercenary and met him and spoke to him in a restaurant over a cup of coffee. And I said to him, "Can't you do something to remove Mugabe, Robert Mugabe, from power?" And of course, he just looked at me because, you know, I could have been a government agent setting him up. But I was genuine. And I'm not going to go into that now currently. But I knew him well, and he'd even written on my website. He'd even written articles on my website. But the point is that you can have 10 million white men out there talking and getting very frustrated about our politics, but none of us has got the courage and determination to go and actually kill somebody. And that is where these wolves, these white wolves, in their own way, they went and did the violence that so many of us wished we had the courage to do. These white wolves should not be denounced. They are carrying out actions that we wished we could do. They are carrying out actions that we wish we had the money and organization to carry out. And you know, talk is cheap. You can talk until the cows come home. And with a Jew, you can argue with a Jew for 25 years and the Jew will not stop arguing. And that is because talk is cheap. But if you really want to show people how frustrated you are, you go and you do something. And if you really want to show people how you feel, you can go and kill people and go and do something violent. And then everybody's got to take notice. Even the president or the prime minister of the country has to take notice. And it's also a message. It shows a level of frustration, and if enough of us do it, then the message will be conveyed to the leaders that goes something like this. You can try to stop us, but if you do, you might die. And last year in 2019, a German went and blew away a German politician who'd been pushing multiculturalism and diversity. A German went and put him in the ground. And Dylan Roof went and took a black radical politician in America and put him 6 feet under. So these are examples of white guys who've gone and killed politicians as a way of showing that you can carry on with your anti-white shit, but somebody on our side is going to put you in the ground. And when you look at this movie, which is pretty accurate, I've gone and done some reading on what Breivik did, and I've checked it against the movie. The movie is dead accurate. So you're going to get a good feel for this, because unlike Brenton Tarrant, there's no film footage of Breivik doing what he did. So the movie is the closest thing to the actual reality. The only film footage of what he did that exists is the film footage that is of the bomb that he planted in the center of Oslo. And what a bomb, I must tell you. The damage that he caused was tremendous. I lived in Pretoria at the time of the Church Street bombing, which killed a number of people and injured close to 200 people. And it tore out a corner of the South African Air Force building, which was about two blocks away from where I lived. And I want to tell you, the damage that Breivik's bomb did, his bomb didn't physically rip out chunks of the building like the car bomb that occurred in Pretoria. But in terms of the explosive power over a wide area, it blew out windows and things and caused mayhem for a hectic distance. So for somebody who had to build his own bomb, Breivik did quite an amazing task, really. And just like I've read to you about what is written about him on Wikipedia, which says that he had a company and he also speculated on the stock market, etc., that Breivik is an intelligent person. And when you see what he did with his violence, you'll see this guy is intelligent, he's organized, he's determined. Now, just a few other facts about him. One of my supporters was saying, well, he was weird because of his youth and he had all kinds of psychological problems. The problem with that kind of argument is that you're starting to go down the path of the liberals. If you say, well, you see, this person had a childhood that was like this and this and this, and it made him unfit and weird and so forth. Once you start going down that path, you are moving down the arguments of a liberal. And a liberal believes in the power of the environment instead of the power of DNA. So you're immediately saying, well, you see, if he didn't have a mother that was like this and he was different in some other way, then he wouldn't have grown up to be what he was. I don't take these things too seriously, and as you will see, they have done psychological tests on him, just like they did with Dylann Roof. He is not insane. What I will say about him is that he had a very unhappy youth. He lived alone with his mom. His mother didn't like him. There was a lot of weirdness to do with his mom. But he had an unhappy youth. He also wanted to join the Norwegian army, and he was rejected by the Norwegian army. However, he proved what he could do. And I think he might well have done very well for himself in the Norwegian army. Something I want to mention about my brother, who's much older than me. My brother fought in Rhodesia, and he spent 6 months of the year in the army. And my brother, in the late 1970s, one day when he came back from a tour of duty, my brother said to me the one day, he said, terrorists have it really easy. And he was referring to these black communist terrorists. He said to me, these terrorists have it really easy. For us to go and catch these terrorists is a really difficult job. You know, you've got to track them down, find them, hunt them down, kill them. But he said, to be a terrorist is easy. And my brother had been in the Special Air Services, which was an elite whites-only unit based on the British SAS. My brother said to me on that day, he said, if I was a terrorist, I would go and I'd plant a bomb here and I'd do something over there and I'd drive another distance and go and do something there. And he said to me, by the end of the day, they would think that there were 100 different terrorists who'd done this, but it actually would have just been me. I would have gotten my car and I'd have done something here, driven 2 hours, done something over there, etc. And that type of thinking that my brother described to me in the 1970s, that is literally what Anders Breivik did. He planted a bomb and then he drove a long distance and got to an island where he struck the second time. I also just want to make a few points about the movie, about the first 30 minutes that you're going to see, because you might not be familiar with Breivik and some aspects of it. Breivik rents a farm, and he rents this farm, and on this farm for 2 years, he prepares all the things that he needs for what he's going to do. And he's mainly preparing the bomb, but he's getting all his things together. Another thing that you'll see in the movie is that Breivik gets onto a laptop and he emails his manifesto. That 1,500 page manifesto, he emails it to more than 1,000 people 90 minutes before the attack. The guy is very organized. Another point about his manifesto, even though he sounds somewhat Christian-like in some of the writings, and even though it's even got a type of Knights Templar cross on it, Breivik himself says he's an Odinist. So he doesn't identify as a Christian per se. But there is a bit of inconsistency there. And at that time, he was focusing a lot on the Islamic invasion of Europe. So I think he was playing with a bit of politics there. He was probably also playing a bit to the Christians who might be out there, even though he himself is not a Christian. You are not dealing with a stupid person. I've got to emphasize that over and over again. In the movie, he dresses as a policeman, and that's what he did in real life. I found the portion about him getting to the island and killing the people on the island. I must tell you, the whole thing impressed the hell out of me. Because how he could get to that island, when I look at his plan of action to get to the island and get onto the island, it was actually something that could have gone very wrong. To me, it was like the weakest part of his plan. But he had to get to the island because his targets were on the island. However, to get to the island and getting to it the way he did is a combination of brilliance. It's truly amazing how this guy pulled it off. It's absolutely astounding because he was interacting with other people and the slightest thing could have gone wrong and then he might not have been able to get to that island. I found that part truly amazing. He is the only white wolf that has had a movie made about him. And as you can imagine, the movie was not made by right-wingers. It was not made by people sympathetic to him. However, even in the movie, they state clearly, they have him saying words like, "You are Marxists, you are the children of the elite, you are liberals, I'm going to kill you. Today you are going to die." And he tells them why he's killing them. And that adds to the kind of things that I'm explaining to you. That the movie and the data that they put into the movie confirms that this guy was hitting liberals. And these liberals were going there for political reasons. If you listen carefully, the Prime Minister or the President of Norway actually talks about how he went to the island when he was younger. It's a place where the Norwegian Labour Party is busy politically indoctrinating the youth against whites. They're talking diversity, they are talking all kinds of anti-white shit in there. And that is exactly the kind of person that he went after. And these people are actually fucking traitors in the real world. And I see nothing wrong with Breivik going and killing them because that is political indoctrination. They are busy being indoctrinated to work against their own countries. They're being indoctrinated against preserving their own people, their own heritage, etc. Breivik must therefore be the first guy, especially in Europe, to stand up and spit in the face of liberalism. He gave it the big finger in a big way. All these Jews and liberals are quietly sitting in classrooms and they are busy feeding poison into the minds of the youth. Poison to destroy their own countries and to work against Western and white civilization. And I really think there's nothing wrong with what Breivik did. He picked his target and it was a political target. Those were politicized people. And you'll see in the movie that they've got non-whites there and they are busy talking about how they are going to change the demographics of Norway. In that sense, Breivik is maybe even ahead of his time because the massed immigration that's been pouring into Europe in recent years wasn't that bad at the time that he was doing it. But he saw them for being the enemies that they were and he found a political target. And the bomb that he set off in the center of Oslo, right near the government buildings, very close to where the leader of Norway is. There are also people who've mentioned that Breivik was a Freemason. And I looked this up, and on the Wikipedia page it says that he was a low-level Freemason and he got up to about the fourth level. Now, I want to tell you a bit about Freemasons, because it's something that I've dug into in the last 2 years, and I've had a chance to meet actual Freemasons. I did speak to a Freemason more than a decade ago, a guy who lives near me, and he'd become a Freemason because his dad had been a Freemason. But he didn't give me much input that was of use. However, in the last 2 years, I had a chance to meet a guy who was a very dedicated Freemason. He had reached level 32, and he'd had a heart attack, and that caused him to get out of Freemasonry because his health was so bad. And he could prove all his stuff. It was very easy to prove that this guy was a Freemason. Everybody in the area knew about it, and he openly spoke about it. And he even brought some of his certificates. I had a chance on 2 weekends to spend several hours talking to him in depth and ask him questions. And another twist to this Freemason was that the woman he married, her father was an even higher ranking Freemason. And I want to tell you something about these Freemasons. Her father, who was a really high ranking Freemason, owned 27 farms. 27 farms. If you're a Freemason, then you're in there with the Jews and the money flows. So you don't get to be a really high-ranking Freemason if you're not going to get some financial benefits from this. But this particular Freemason who quit because of his health, he wasn't wealthy at all. But in my discussions with him, I debated things with him. And as always, because he's a white guy, I talked to him about race and about racial politics and history. And I found myself arguing with him over the many hours that I talked to him. And it became very clear to me what Freemasons stand for. A Freemason is basically the same as a liberal. Freemasons believe that the whole world is one race, that we must all live together, that all humans are the same, and we must work together in peace with all humans. In other words, he's a true liberal, he's like a Jew, he's a true liberal, and he has no loyalty to his race whatsoever. He has no loyalty to his nation state. And it was very clear to me from intense discussions with this guy that this is how they think. Furthermore, they also tend to have a bit of a Christian twist to them. And the Freemasons spoke in loving terms about Israel. So Freemasonry is also linked to Jews, and in other research that I did, there were Europeans who said that in the 1800s that the Jews actually bought out all the Freemason lodges of the world. So the Freemasons of the world are very likely totally controlled by Jews. But they are liberal, they are Israel-loving, sort of Christian diversity-loving Zionist types. But they see the world as one, and they have zero, zero loyalty to race, zero loyalty to nation states. They are globalists. They are liberals through and through to the core. I think that Breivik, like a lot of other people in the white right, went and fiddled and got himself immersed in different things as he was growing up and as he was trying different things. But I don't see any reason to suppose that Freemasons ever set out to support him. He may have tried to see what he could learn and do, etc., but I don't think it benefited him, and I don't think that Freemasonry is behind what Breivik did. Not at all. Because even these Freemasons in South Africa, when they get to do things, they give money to blacks, they do all kinds of liberal stuff. They pump big amounts of money into liberal stuff. They would never support a white who goes out to kill people that are essentially the same people that are on their side. Because Breivik went and killed people who are absolutely the same kinds of people that a Freemason would approve of. In fact, Freemasons would be giving money to those people to have those political indoctrination camps. That is the kind of stuff that Freemasons would support. So he may have been a Freemason, maybe even had very minor benefits, but I don't think it was a serious thing, and I don't think that in any way, shape, or form that Freemasons would have funded him. Freemasons operate like liberals, they operate in the open, they operate with money, they operate with politics. If they were to truly get somebody to do something violent, then they would have to be really desperate and they'd want to see that some racist is killed. No ways in hell would it make any sense for Freemasons to send a guy to kill all those youngsters who themselves have exactly the same values as the Freemasons. That's just totally insane. And I cannot see from the things that I've discovered of Freemasons that Freemasons would do that. Furthermore, Freemasons are actually quite cowardly. They're like the Jews and they're very, very sneaky. That's another thing that I picked up from the Freemason when I spoke to him. Very sneaky, very soft. They're slipping under your nose like the Jews. So they are the last people who would openly want to get involved in getting somebody to do anything violent. They wouldn't do that. And least of all, violence aimed at those kinds of people. They would never do that. They would rather be busy subverting people. And they have lots of money. So for them, it's very easy. They'd operate like the liberals and the Jews. Very easily, very openly, and the police would have no reason to ever want to arrest them. And I can't see them even in the most twisted way funding a guy like Breivik. And these white wolves who are doing these violent acts, remember, if you go back decades, you'll find that blacks were doing it, Jews were doing it. Everybody was drawing attention to their politics using violence. In fact, Jews, blacks, Asians, in fact, every single race has used violence to draw attention to their politics in the prior decades. It is only now, eventually, that whites are starting to do it, that whites are feeling desperate enough and angry enough to do it. So there's nothing that we're doing that hasn't been done before, that hasn't been done in a bloodier and nastier way. And I will repeat to you, all the non-whites who did it had funding. The whites don't have funding. They've got no state support, no military support, no secret CIA monies that they're getting, nothing. They're doing it out of their own pockets. A final point about these white wolves. These white wolves are proving the effectiveness of white males. However, don't rush out there to be a white wolf yourself. I think that what we really need to do is get on to bigger things. and the bigger things is moving beyond the single white wolf. We need to do like the Germans, like the German U-boats. The Germans often used the term wolf packs, and they used it especially with their submarines. But even their armor, etc., they worked like a wolf pack. That sort of teamwork. We need to be thinking in terms of wolf packs and wolf armies. That's how we should think. Because I think we've proven, these guys have proven what can be done. And I think that as the White Right matures and as we improve our teamwork, that if we can stop this process of selling out our own people and having infiltrators, if we can overcome those security issues, the next step is wolf armies, large armies of white males who go and use violence and warfare to seize strategic things that we want. We really need to think big. We need to think in terms of white males using deadly force for strategic gains for our race. We need to start thinking in those terms. We need to start conquering territories and defending ourselves and forming places where we are safe. And we need to build up these mechanisms. And I believe in the long term that the entire Western world can be freed if white males gather together and use deadly force to seize back all the countries of the Western world. It's totally doable. And the white wolves have proven what a single man can do. And if we can overcome the weaknesses of the teams and the groups and the organizations that we overcome the leadership problem of weak, pathetic, useless leaders, or leaders who are secretly controlled by our enemies and spies in our midst, etc. If we can overcome those problems, then we can seize back entire countries. It's going to be as straightforward as that. And if we then have men working in proper structures, proper military structures, you'll see that we'll be a kick-ass army. We could have kick-ass armies in the future. I totally believe it, and the White Wolves have proven it. And all we need now is the gathering together of men so that when we work as a group, as a team, that we are greater than the sum of our individual parts. That's the important thing. That is how I view it. I'm going to show you a couple of still pictures quickly about Breivik with some comments, and then you can dive into the movie. And I've only cut out the section from the beginning up to the point where he's arrested. I'm not interested in all the liberal boo-hoo and tears and crying and all the blah 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 about racism. I couldn't care less. We're just going to focus on what he did and how he did it. And that movie, it's one movie that is well worth watching. It's actually damn good. And I must tell you, that part where he goes onto the island, if that is a true representation, and I have no reason to doubt that it's relatively accurate, that if that's a true representation of what he did, then it was incredible. That man was clever. And he was truly very sharp. You're not dealing with an idiot. When you're dealing with Anders Breivik, you are not dealing with a fool. You're dealing with one of the most intelligent, most organized white wolves of our time. And I don't think this guy is easily going to be beaten. He might remain the greatest white wolf of the age of the internet. Truly, what he did was incredible. And he went after the traitors that are being created inside his own country. Because that's how liberals and Jews work. They come into your country and they create treason in your country. Ton Staffel of the website The Age of Treason, that's his basic theme. You know, that you are looking at treason occurring right under your nose and it's not being punished. But this time, in the case of Breivik, he went and he sorted them out. He went and showed them the serious rage of a serious white man who does not like that bullshit kind of nonsense. So I think he did great in that sense. He went and showed them the nasty side of the white male. And let me tell you, there are lots of people, lots of scum out there who need to meet the nasty side of the white male. I just want to show you a couple of photographs and things relating to Breivik. This is a thing I saw many years ago that somebody had done. And this is Breivik, and he's in court. And somebody on the white right did this thing. And it says, "What can one person do? Inspiration, pass it on." And there is Breivik in court, and he's kind of hiding a smile. So, just to show you, what can one person do? That guy, that white guy that you see there, that Norwegian, that Viking, he's more fucking dangerous than a bunch of ANC terrorists in South Africa. What can one man do, one white man do? Well, he shows us the way. This is a photograph of the bomb. This is after the bomb went off in Oslo. And you can see how much dust and so forth was in the sky on that day. That's from his vehicle bomb, his car bomb. Just to give you an idea that this was one bloody big bomb. And when you see the film footage in the film, it's very similar. It's virtually identical to the real film footage. I've seen the real footage of the actual blast and everything. So this film is a pretty good idea, a pretty good story of exactly what happened there. It'll give you a bit of a feeling for what this guy did on that day. Very amazing. Probably a guy with no military training, like Dylan Roof, like the others. Just a couple of things about Breivik when he appears in court. Breivik is always very careful about his appearance. You'll see he's very fastidious about his appearance. He's always well presented. And then he does some strange things with his hands. In this case, I'm not quite sure what this gesture is, but the one that draws the most attention are the times when he does a Nazi type salute. He doesn't always do an exact Nazi salute. That kind of salute is like the Black Power salute of the blacks in Africa, the communists and Jews. Jews in Africa also did this. To show their solidarity with the blacks. And this is almost like a combination of, maybe it's a white power salute, which has got, it's got the raised arm that is the Roman salute, which is the Nazi fascist salute as well. But maybe it's a bit of a white power Nazi type salute. And here you can see a true Nazi salute. And this is also in the courtroom. He does this a couple of times. I'll even show you some film footage where he does it. So notice also when he shaves, he has his own, he's very careful about how he presents himself. He does a good job, you know. Something that somebody else said, Breivik remains one of the most often referenced individuals in radical right groups online. They see him as a martyr who sacrificed himself for the same cause. And I would definitely add to that. From what I can see of what he did, I think that it was genuine. And here in 2019, some liberal hag, and she says, why is the violent far right still able to organize online? Listen here, bitch. The far right doesn't have a fraction of the violent groups that the communists, blacks, and everybody else had. We don't have a fraction of them. They don't have any support in any way. There's nobody giving them money or anything. You're looking at a handful, a tiny handful of white individuals who've gone and carried out acts of violence. So it doesn't even come close to what the blacks and all the others got up to. And him doing another salute on another day, and he threatened a hunger strike. He's had some amazing achievements in court, and the Norwegians also don't have a death penalty. So he's done a bunch of very clever things. This guy is no idiot. You're not dealing with a fool here. His jail sentence is 21 years. It's the maximum that they can give in Norway. So really, he's done some... This guy is clever. You're not just dealing with anybody here. And here's somebody else mentioning him, Anders Breivik and the Knights Templar. But there you can see him doing his sort of combination white power salute in a Nazi style. And here's another quote. It says, the Knights Templar are a constant source of reference during all of this. Breivik conceives himself as a member of the Knights Templar and believes he is executing a long-term plan of freeing Europe of cultural genocide. And that is the other thing about Breivik. Breivik is not just talking about Norway. He talks about saving Europe. He's out to save Europe. And I think it's a fantastic thing. He's thinking big. He's thinking racial. He's thinking cross borders. He's thinking like a pan-European. And on the right-hand side, you can see this is what his 2083 Declaration of Independence thing looked like. And they actually sold one of his manifests for £89. They sold one of his manifestos for £89. It could be, my theory is that he's trying to appeal a little bit to the Christian segment of Europe, though he himself is not a Christian. And here's another one. This is from 2012, and it says, Norwegian mass killer smirks as court finds him sane. That's very important. They found him to be sane. Just like Dylan Roof, he was sane. There's nothing wrong with them. They are not mentally ill. They know what they are doing and they have no problem with it. They made that choice in their lives. And he gets 21 years. And he has a good laugh about it. And then in this article, the guy on the far right here, this is Brenton Tarrant, the Australian, who killed 50 Muslims and injured another 50. And he claims that he had a bit of interaction with Breivik. He looks up to Breivik. And I'd say, you're looking at these two guys, you're looking at the greatest white wolf on the left and the second greatest white wolf on the right. The one is a Norwegian, the other one's an Australian. I'm telling you, the racial thing is coming out. And for me, it's beautiful. White guys in different countries agree on the same thing. You're getting more and more whites in different countries agreeing on the white race being saved, civilization being retained, and our values coming to the fore again. I think huge things are coming out of the white right. And you are seeing white guys in different countries, America, Germany, Italy, Norway, Australia, You're seeing different white guys getting up and going and killing and making their political statement by themselves. I think it's an amazing thing. So back to the one that's my favorite. What can one person do? Inspiration, pass it on. And what we need is armies of white males thinking like this. It's in court. And look at what happens. They take his handcuffs off, and then he gives what appears to be a Nazi-type salute. Let's just go to the beginning of this. Notice how smartly dressed he is. He's always neat, and he looks after his appearance. His handcuffs are being taken off. The other one's coming off. And then watch for the Nazi salute. I don't know what he says to the policeman. But there's his Nazi salute. And he does his thing.
Lilian!
Hey!
Hey! We sent the spot for you!
Perfect!
Oh, good to see you, man.
Good to see you.
Crew is gathered.
Hey,
long time.
Hey, Toria. Hey, how are you doing?
Yes, right.
Well,
what's good?
Oh, you actually brought a sleeping bag this time?
Yeah, our parents packed.
Oh, great.
This is painful to look at.
So on Saturday, you'll be going to the OF summer camp at Utøya.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the schedule, and attached is also a draft of your speech.
I've started with your connection to the island, how it inspired your activism, and then you kind of push on to the issues.
Good. I think it needs to be a bit more personal, more about my memories from the island.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And then I really want to address the challenge of youth unemployment. I think that's very important.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that's good.
Make sure we build in proper time to really meet with the kids.
Okay.
2 hours, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the committee papers are in the briefcase. You
that's
should read those before Monday.
Got it.
Papers.
Well, I think we're all set. Thank you.
Thank you.
Get some rest.
You too.
You too, sir.
Thank you.
Nice.
And tomorrow morning you have the national security briefing at 10 for an hour.
I'll do it in the rest of the scene.
Okay.
And bring the justice minister in earlier.
Yes, of course.
Have a good night.
With the speech, sir.
Thank you.
Good night, sir.
See you back here after lunch.
Anders?
To see you.
Hi.
See you. Just come on in. It seats for everyone.
Is it okay? Yeah, fine.
Okay, welcome everyone. So, welcome to the first seminar for today. We are going to do an exercise. which I have called If I Were Prime Minister. One of the good things about Utøya is that you can meet friends and you can play music and maybe stay up a bit late. Yeah? But it's also an opportunity to think about your future. You grow up so fast and one day it will be you that will be the leader of your community. Viljar, can you start?
Yeah, sure. Hi. How are you? So, let's see. So in Svalbard, where I come from, everyone is welcome, regardless of nationality. We've got Norwegians, Russians, Chinese, Croatians, all living and working together. And we work really hard to integrate everyone.
But in Svalbard, it's like 2,000 people. How do you translate that to the rest of Europe?
It's the principle, and that's what's important. And if I was prime minister, that's what I'd stand for.
We got a white van parked out back. Is it one of ours? I just checked the license plate and I'm trying to find the driver.
Central, will you check the serial number for me, please?
Get him out! Come on! Move! minister security.
Center of the city, that's in the government district near the Prime Minister's office. We have no further details.
Call the cabinet. I want the police director, head of defense, and the PST. Inform the king. Prime Minister is safe. Government is functioning.
There is a lot of debris and smoke, but I didn't clearly see a car that has slipped onto its roof, and I'm assuming it's a result of the blast itself.
As you probably heard, there's been an explosion in the government district in Oslo.
Yeah.
We don't have much information yet. Many of you have parents who work there, okay? So you should probably call them if you haven't done that already. In the meantime, we will suspend activities until we get some more information. But for now, you go and call your parents, okay? Any more questions?
No. The Prime Minister? Do you know if it's okay?
Hey, Mom?
Hi, Viljar.
Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Dad's with me. We're at the hotel. We're fine.
They say it was an explosion.
Dad says there's been some kind of explosion.
Was it a bomb?
Yeah, we don't know. Are you both okay?
Yeah, we're fine. Tori is
a bit scared, but I'll take care of him. Okay. Yeah, I promise.
We'll call you when we know what's happened, okay?
Why? She's fine. She said they were nowhere near, so... Come. Let's go. I need to change.
Lena, are you okay? What's happened? Have you talked to Eric and the others? Okay, cancel all the campaign meetings. Call me when you hear anything, okay?
So here's what we know so far. At around 3:30, a massive explosion was reported in the center of the government district. Witnesses have described to us extensive destruction, hitting a number of buildings. There are many confirmed injured and, unfortunately, also a number.
You can see shattered windows up to 300 yards in each.
Like many countries in Europe, the security services have already been operating on high alert. Counter-terrorism police in Oslo have made a number of arrests in recent months.
Hi, I'm Martin Nielsen from Oslo PD. You heard about the bomb in the city?
Yes.
I've been sent to secure the island. Where's the ferry?
Oh, the ferry got cancelled.
Get it over here. I need it now.
Okay. Monica?
Go ahead.
There's a policeman over here, and we need a ferry immediately.
Yeah, I will be there. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. It will be here soon.
Okay, good.
Hi. I'm Monica. I'm in charge here.
Hi. Martin Nielsen, Oslo Police Department.
Nice to meet you.
You heard about the explosion in Oslo?
Yeah, it's terrible.
Yeah.
Is it bad?
The whole Prime Minister's office, everything. I need you to take me to the island.
Yeah.
Get everyone together and I'll give a debrief about the bomb.
Everyone?
Yeah, everyone. It's important.
What's in the cases?
Weapons.
Well, you have to cover them up. They will scare the children.
I'm sure.
Just go ahead.
Thank you.
What's going on?
Don't worry, police have arrived, so fine.
Simon?
Yeah?
Do you have my sweater? Any news on the bomb?
Here you go.
It hit the Prime Minister's office.
Yeah, at the Department of Justice.
Was it Al-Qaeda?
It doesn't say.
Hey. Hi.
This is Trine Benson, our head of security.
Hi. Martin Nielsen, Oslo PD.
They only sent one officer? Why didn't anybody call?
Everyone's needed in Oslo. It's chaos. So they sent me to secure the island.
What precinct are you from?
PST, Police Security Service.
So you must know Jørn. He works down at PST, doesn't he?
Jørn? Yeah, sure. He's one of my superiors. Is everyone gathered up there for the debrief?
Yes, we're calling them in now.
We need to get on with this.
Actually, can I see your ID?
Yeah, sure.
What was that?
Maybe you should go and check it out. Use your radio.
I will.
Stay away from the windows. Get down on the floor and I'll come inside.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
This way, this way! Wait up!
You will die today, Marxists, liberals, members of the elite.
Quick, down here! Get down behind here!
Down!
Enough! Enough! Over here!
Them
and he hung up.
But
He said, what did he say exactly?
He said, Mom, someone's shooting at us. He went really quickly. It was just like that.
Shooting at us?
Yes. He's going to voicemail.
Multiple reports of gunfire on Utah Island.
Copy that. This is 05. We are responding. What's the RV? Over.
Repeat, please.
What's the RV? RV for Utøya Island. Over.
Stand by.
Come on, come on.
Sir, we may have another attack. Report of gunfire on Utøya.
What?
No, I haven't.
The summer camp?
Just getting details now. What do we know?
We have hundreds of kids there.
Any details? I mean, officers are present.
Where are you? Come out, you Marxists!
He's coming for us. He's coming.
Tori, look at me. It's going to be okay. I promise you.
Come on. Delta 2, you take the north side, we take the west side. Got it?
Go. I need an update on Delta.
I don't know. You just get him in there. I mean,
this is taking too long, right? Because there is no helicopter. No, there is no helicopter at all.
We just need them to be on standby.
Are they on the island yet? Where the hell are they?
When you get this, call us.
Confirmed reports that there is another attack ongoing. This now looks like a coordinated gun and bomb attack on Oslo city center and Utøya Island. I'm afraid we have no further details yet, but it looks very much like this is by no means.
Hey!
It's all right.
It's coming. Down.
We have to
go.
These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.